Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrne, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrne Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed.
The human-vulture dog bond does exist. So does the human-vulture rat bond. And the human-vulture dog-rat bond. Chances are you never gave any of these a thought, unless you live in India. I didn't either until a serendipitous set of events brought them to mind. It began with a conversation with another veterinarian at a conference on veterinary anesthesia and analgesia, that is, pain control. My comment about the number of drugs being used to perform a relatively simple surgical procedure caused my colleague to bring up the subject of vultures, specifically about the negative contribution diclofenac, a human and veterinary analgesic drug, had on the precipitous decline in the Indian vulture population. How bad was it? The population of white-rumped vultures plunged from more than 80 million in the 1980s to mere thousands today. The populations of three other species decreased by approximately 95% during that same period. If you're one of those humans who classify your bond with vultures as a human, disgusting animal one, you might be thinking, so what? The death of vultures is a good thing. And if you live in parts of Pennsylvania where black buzzards increasingly appear, you may agree even more. But let's look at this more objectively. Granted, this isn't as easy as it used to be. According to a study by anthrozoologist Kate Marks, almost a third of the people blogging about their experiences hiking the Appalachian Trail described wild animals they encountered as cute. This may not strike you as unusual if you spend a lot of time engaged in social media, but it's a relatively new post-social media association. Once we apply cute terminology to another living being, it changes our relationship with them. The existence of cute wild animals also necessitates the recognition of animals who don't live up to our cute standard. And that, in turn, will affect how we treat those who flunk our cute test. For example, it's easier to drum up support to protect endangered species people consider cute than those who elicit neutral or negative emotions. However, perceiving a wild animal as cute doesn't necessarily guarantee our goodwill. In another study of those Appalachian Trailwalker blogs, the same mice considered cute when scampering on the trail instantly became obnoxious pests when they followed the sleeping huts and the hikers' belongings. Talk about fickle human-animal bonds. Unlike the cute wildlife labeled by post-social media first world folks, and uncute though vultures may be, the Indian human population and vultures shares a long and mutually rewarding bond. And like many such human-wild animal bonds, its value was taken for granted until the animals disappeared. Keeping in mind that we can't say anything about an animal's behavior unless we know the context in which it occurs, how did the near extinction of these vulture species have such a negative impact on human population? It begins with a way of life thousands of years ago that recognized and embraced the interaction of humans and animals. Some of these human-animal interactions were so important to human survival that they became incorporated into religions that maintain close, direct, or indirect connections with the natural world. However, an awareness of the significance of these connections lessened over time. For example, approximately 80% of the Indian population are Hindus, a religion that considers cattle and vultures sacred animals. Cattle are not eaten, and when they die, their remains are left for the vultures. Other groups also rejected burial and cremation for deceased humans. Instead, they placed their dead on a high structure called a Tower of Silence for the vultures and other scavengers. Put in much colder modern terms, the vultures functioned as a natural, fast, and effective disposal system in the 104 degree Fahrenheit climate. What does it mean to live in an area where a key group of scavengers are eliminated by human folly in a remarkably short period of time? Perhaps the closest those of us living in first world countries can come to understanding this is to imagine a garbage collection strike without a prayer for its immediate resolution during a brutally hot spring and summer. Day after day, month after month, the garbage piles up. And with it comes problems that threaten human and animal health. Six qualities made and make vultures a safe and effective natural disposal system. 1. Their digestive fluids are more acidic and corrosive than that of other animals. Thus, microorganisms that could kill or be carried off by other scavengers don't survive in the vulture. 2. Their weak legs prevent them from carrying a carcass off to another location. This also helps prevent the spread of pathogens and parasites. 3. Unlike other scavengers who also routinely prey on the weak, vultures prefer their food dead. 4. Their excellent vision and even better sense of smell enables them to locate a dead body up to a mile away. 5. Coupled with their vision and sense of smell, their large wings and ability to soar enable them to clean up large territories. 6. They're quiet. But despite the vulture's many virtues, Mother Nature didn't sit idly by mourning their loss. She did her best to compensate for human folly yet again. Nature abhors a vacuum. If the scavenger species that co-evolved with the dead food supply for thousands of years disappears, one or more species will fill that void. But like stand-ins who developed other skills while waiting for their chance at stardom, the new scavengers lack the physiological and behavioral qualities and the bond with humans that ensured the vulture's success all those years. If you haven't guessed it already, this is where the dogs and rats get added to the human-vulture bond. When the vultures disappeared, two other species, wild dogs and rats, moved in. However, unlike the vultures, neither dogs nor rats brought much to the table except their appetites. Both species are more than capable of carrying diseases and parasites that are transmissible to humans. Among these diseases are those that strike fear in the hearts of even the most cocooned first world dwellers. Rabies, the plague, anthrax. Thousands of human deaths from these diseases occurred when the vultures disappeared. Rabies always has been a problem in India because it hosts the world's largest population of wild dogs, millions of them, plus a post-rabies exposure treatment that few can afford. Unlike the vultures, wild dogs are more comfortable around human habitats and establish smaller territories. As their numbers increased in response to the increased number of dead animals to scavenge, They also attracted predators. Among these are leopards, who prey on wild dogs, but also any domestic animals and people who get in their way. Unlike the vultures, who are true dead-end hosts and a beneficial presence, the wild dogs do more harm than good. And so do the rats. But unlike the dogs, the rats can invade human homes more easily. They can get inside human food supplies. And after they eat, they defecate and urinate on the food, fouling it with their pathogens, some of which also are transmissible to humans. When all these factors are taken into account, the decline in the vultures costs the Indian government about $24 billion a year. How ironic that a drug developed to make a few humans and other domestic animals more comfortable destroyed a natural cleanup system that had helped protect millions, if not billions, of animals and people for thousands of years.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries, and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Katova Arts, www.katova.com.